Class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother, Ryan Diesel. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield Podcast segment. You know, amidst this whole COVID-19 pandemic, you had Bernie Sanders drop out of the race. And I actually don't want to talk about Bernie Sanders yet. There will be time for that. But, I want to talk about this obsession, or not even really an obsession, with Barack Obama being this overlord in the Democratic Party, who is such a big shot caller that he manipulates and basically runs the entire board when it comes to making political moves, or at least the political moves that were necessary to put Joe Biden ahead in the field. First and foremost, I gotta tell you this. One, look, I'm not under any delusionary notions that Obama is a great guy. But I'm also not under any delusionary notions that Obama is the end-all, be-all, boss of the Democratic Party. Why? Because Obama is possibly one of a few, and I do mean a few, but it's likely that he really is one of none. So he is the only one that is at that level where he exists. He is the only black person who is in the presidential club. He is the only black person who is in the presidential club. And that puts him in a very different club than a lot of other black folks who you might think of as powerful. How many black billionaires do you know? Billionaires. Off the bat, you know, you'd probably name Oprah Winfrey. But do you know anybody else? Jay-Z? Last time I checked, he wasn't a billionaire. Sean Combs? Nope, not a billionaire. There's more, though. There are many more billionaires, black billionaires. But you don't really hear about them very often. And you don't really hear about them because to be at that level, and, you know, this is really directed at white progressives now because they are the ones with the obsession over Barack Obama being the boss of the Democratic Party. To be a black billionaire, though, you have to understand your role. There are certain things that you can and cannot do. To be a black billionaire, yes, you have to think, in some terms, like the white billionaires that you are around. But most black billionaires know that on the hierarchical scale, they are slightly below their white counterparts. They are slightly below their white counterparts. So they pay a lot of deference to their white counterparts. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, yes, there is a lot of racism at the top of the society, too. What, did you think that it just existed at the bottom and, you know, they became enlightened at the top? This is the interesting aspect about progressives that I understand it, but it frustrates me because they don't make these connections. They'll be quick to say on a class level that there is no type of enlightenment at the top of the society. But when it comes to race, it's a blind spot. A huge blind spot. This leads me to Barack Obama. All the media had to do was write one article about Barack Obama making the phone calls necessary to push this person and that person and that person out of the race on Super Tuesday. And the ire of white progressives turned on Barack Obama. Now, granted, their ire has been there for quite some time. I listened to Jimmy Dore, and I mean, the viciousness and the poisonousness that drips from his mouth every time he says the word Obama is really disheartening for me. Because I understand some of the criticisms, but Jimmy Dore makes Obama out to be a dictator. As if, you know, if Obama really wanted to, he could have just done these things and that thing and everything would have been great. Forgiving, of course, the fact that Nancy Pelosi was in the Congress, and she was the Speaker, but she didn't seem willing to do those things either. Neither did Harry Reid. But they're white, so they get a pass. And look, I'm not saying Jimmy Dore's a racist. That's not this. That's not what I'm doing here. What I'm saying is race blinds people. Particularly white progressives. Because they believe that they've overcome race, because they believe that they don't think in terms of race anymore, it blinds them to the fact that they do indeed sometimes think in race. They think with race at the forefront. And it stops them from being in a position to actually make an objective argument and analyses. Barack Obama wasn't a dictator. He wasn't. And he had to deal with a party whom just 60 years prior, let me remind progressives of this, would have actually been, well, no, it would have been 60 years. With just 60 years prior, they were the party of the Ku Klux Klan. 30 years prior, Joe Biden was touting the fact that he was working with segregationists. And this was a big thing in the Democratic Party, to work with segregationists. They were equally the party, 60 years ago, they were equally the party of liberals, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, New Deal Democrats, and Southern Democrats who supported Jim Crow and were racist to the core. Most of your Blue Dog Democrats are underground racists. They're Democrat in name only. You only take the political realignment of the 1980s into consideration. They remind you and me of the old Dixocrats, the old Democrats who were anti-black and very conservative, but they were Democrats. And if you believe that that only existed in the South, then, you know, you're not reading your history. This existed out west, in California. It exists still to this day in the burgs, in California, on the West Coast, in the Midwest, on the East Coast. I know because I've gone through some of them burgs. There is a deep hostility towards black people in power, no matter where you go. No matter the excitement of the crowds of people and their chants. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. There's still a hostility among the suburbs when it comes to black men in power, particularly black men who are married to black women. Yes, they could tolerate it if that black man is married to a white woman because, hey, he's got our clan. Yeah, I'm getting real here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm tired of this. He's got our clan in his interest. They can tolerate it if a black woman is doing her thing as long as, you know, hey, she married to a white man because she has our clan in her best interest. There's deep hostility towards a black man in power who is married to a black woman with black children. Lord only knows how bad it would have been if he actually had a black son. Because then you'd have a prince to worry about, and that's what they'd be concerning themselves with. People forget about the racism that the man experienced at the upper levels of Congress, the upper levels of government, when he first assumed office. I'm not saying everybody was, but there was a lot of it. And that included congressional representatives. But yet Obama was supposed to wave his hand and everything was going to happen the way that he wanted it to. We know today, because of reporting that has come out, that the Democratic leadership in both the House and the Senate, I'm not saying this is how Harry Reid ran his game, but we know, obviously, that Nancy Pelosi hasn't changed. We know that it's like a dictatorship there. Well, let me ask you a question. Did that just come about? Nancy Pelosi was the House Speaker from 2006 to 2010. She was able to get some accomplishments through, by the way. Can't take anything away from her, but she wasn't the type of progressive hero that many of these same progressives who are beating up on Barack Obama, many of them projected her to be back then. Many of these guys weren't actually doing shows, but the ones who were, she was the hero, man. She was the savior. And she was not none of that. But let's go to Barack Obama in the present. Because, you know, the media knows progressives a lot better than progressives know themselves. All they had to do was flick them meat and say, hey, it was a black guy. And just like a conversation of OJ turns very dark very soon after his name is admitted to the conversation. Yeah, as soon as they threw Obama in there, suddenly, boom, oh, it's over. You know, they see nothing else but black guy and black guy screwing them. Let's talk about this, because honest to God, you know, it's time to wake up with this stuff. The establishment is not pro-black. The majority of these people up at the level that Barack Obama's playing around in, these people aren't pro-black. They're pro-business. And black folks, truthfully, are just a means to make money. They're a means to make money. Barack Obama, now fitting into that group, with the type of popularity that he still holds with not only black folks, but with a certain segment of the population. He's beneficial to a group of wealthy people, particularly wealthy white men, who wants to bend the will of the electorate to their needs and their desires. Yes, does Barack Obama have power? Yeah, he has some power. He does. But is Barack Obama getting on the phone and making things happen according to his own will? Yeah, I'm going to say no, not a lot of the times. People wondered why Michelle Obama said she didn't want to run for president when people were like, yeah, run. And, you know, as much as progressives would like to play around, if Michelle Obama came out and said she was replacing Joe Biden tomorrow, most of them would run to the polls and they would have no problem voting for her. As much as they may want to act differently, but they would. They would run and they would vote for her. But the reason why she didn't run for president is because the craziness that occurred with her husband, she saw firsthand. She saw what the inside did to contain him, to stop him. When he even suggested a little bit of change, what they did, and how it wasn't just Republicans, it was Democrats too. She saw that. And she said, I want nothing to do with this. Nothing. The piece that came out about Barack Obama making the calls on or before Super Tuesday hid the power behind the man. I don't know who called Obama up and said, you know, this needs to happen. I don't know that. But I do know this. It wasn't Barack Obama who initiated the thing. I know that it wasn't Barack Obama who sat down and said, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. I know that. And I know it because I understand how the power in this country works. Barack Obama has as much control over this country as I do. He's just making a lot more money than I am. He's in a different club, and I know folks find this hard to believe, but he is. He's in a different club. And Barack Obama worked very hard to get into that club. Now, some of them may say, well, why can't he just be like Jimmy Carter and, you know, just do what Jimmy Carter's doing? Because that's not Barack Obama. But what he is a player. Y'all didn't listen to Liz Warren when she told you, all I am is a player in the game. Okay, wait a minute, what? What was she talking about? Barack Obama is a player in the game. But he isn't the chess master. He's just a part of the game. Now, the irony of this is, if indeed he was the one who made the calls to Pete Buttigieg and all of them to get out the race, the question is, who gave him the authority to make the promises that he had to make to get them all out? Because that's the thing. Everybody talked about how Obama, you know, made these calls, and obviously there were things that were promised to Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and all them to get them out of the race. But nobody has yet told me who gave him the authorization to make those promises. Assuming he promised Pete Buttigieg something along the lines of, you know, an unlimited war chest to run for the office of your choice, you know, for the next decade. Okay. If he made such a promise, which I guarantee, you know, Pete Buttigieg is a ambitious young man, so I'm confident something like that had to occur. Probably even, you know, he was offered consideration for some post in the next administration, maybe even a post at the Democratic Party if Biden isn't elected. But with all of that, who gave Obama the resources to make such a promise? The same thing goes with Amy Klobuchar. Who gave him the resources to do that? You guys want to hate Obama so much, you're missing the point. On the one hand, you could talk endlessly about getting money out of politics. On the one hand, you can talk, or you used to, because you guys remember nothing pre-Obama. But you used to talk about how George Bush had no power, that it was really Dick Cheney who had the power, which, a side note there, a good friend of mine who lived in Texas and was connected politically down there told me something very interesting, which is probably why, which explains why they wanted George Bush to be the president of the United States with Dick Cheney as his vice president. In Texas, apparently, the lieutenant governor has more power than the actual governor. Just a side note. But you used to talk about that. You forgot about that with Obama, though. Obama was going to run in there and, you know, change everything, because he used the word change in his run for the presidency. He was going to be a dictator, basically. And that's what it really boils down to. You don't give, progressives never thought that the system could change Barack Obama. They never gave it a consideration that the system could change Barack Obama. I remember, I think it was the Times, but it may have not been the New York Times. There was a cartoon that was floating around in 2008 after Barack Obama had pretty much sewed up the nomination. And it was him connecting these strings to Wall Street. It was him connecting these strings to Wall Street. And there was a lot of criticism, including from me. But I understand a couple of things now that I didn't understand then. First and foremost, Barack Obama did something that nobody in the Democratic Party thought that he would do, which was get the nomination. Secondly, you had back then, as you still do today, it's less apparent today, but you had factions. You had factions. And Barack Obama was not part of the Clinton faction. Why do you think she was so pissed? Barack Obama was part of another faction. And when that faction's leader was unceremoniously extracted from the party, then Barack Obama became a free agent. And he had to make a decision. And his decision was to, at least how it looked to me, was to join Clinton's faction. And when he joined Clinton's faction, he had to switch from, well, actually, originally when he won the nomination, he had to go and he had to appear before the old factions, donors and what have you, who, you know, anointed him the leader, and that was the connection of the first strings. And then when that leader was essentially removed from the party, he then went to the Clinton faction and made inroads there. Now, granted, there's a question, and actually, I apologize, there is a question as to when some of this took place. It's probable, because the question that I have is, when did he actually make the connection with the first group, and then when did he make the connection with the second group? It's clear that early in his career, especially when he ran for the Senate, that he had made the connection with the first group already. But then it looks like in the summer of 2008, he switched sides. He went to the other faction. Now, why did he switch sides? You'd have to ask him. But I would probably imagine the reason why he switched sides was because the other one was in decline. And so he switched sides. See, a lot of progressives really don't understand. They don't get what this is all about. They really think that this is just about politics and the public good. Should it be about that? Absolutely. But most of this is about ego and about factions and about groups. Barack Obama told you many times before, he told you that he was naive when he went in. And he was. The question that none of you want to ask, because all you want to do is whine like colicky babies, is what did he mean by that? And yes, do I seem irritated? I am. Because as much political maturity as I've seen progressives make over the last 4 years, and they've made great political strides, they've matured politically in a manner which I didn't think was possible. This is still a bugaboo for them. They can't wrap their head around the fact that there is something going on deeper than the public good. My question is, you know, I've made the suggestion many times before, I'm going to make it again. Please, go and get Dan Carlin's Death Throes of a Republic. He spends significant time talking about how the Roman state became retarded by the personal ambitions of the people who should have been looking out for the public good. Now, many of you will ask, and I think rightly so, well, how do you know that Barack Obama didn't fall into that category? I don't. But, I do tend to go with my intuition with a lot of this stuff. And there are certain things that Barack Obama said on the campaign trail that, and I hate to tell you, it's the truth, that we didn't pay attention to. When he said, you know, you guys need to make me do these things, we thought that he was just being, you know, like he was wanking and nodding to democracy. But no, he understood the pressures that he was under. And he understood that without a full-blown movement behind him, without people calling Congress and lighting up the switchboards, putting money together and creating groups to go after congressional people who didn't bend to the will of the populace, if that didn't exist, he wouldn't be able to get anything done that he wanted to get done. He was naive in thinking not only that he could work within the system, but he was also naive to think that people would actually be ready to do that type of thing then. And so he was pushed to where he was pushed to. Now, some of you will say, well, you're just being an apologist for Obama. I can't help you with that, guys. Because I see, look, there's criticisms, which I understand, and then there's just this blatant, almost criminalization of Barack Obama from the standpoint of progressives. But I moved off of my topic. And look, I that's a strong word, but it's the truth. There is no attentiveness to the actual system that Barack Obama was working within, because the system is a white-dominated system, and that will expose some racism in not only politics, but in government. And instead of dealing with that, let's just act like Barack Obama's a dictator who should have done everything right. So, you know, I moved off the topic a little bit. Barack Obama made these calls, made these promises. Again, nobody asks who gave him the resources to make these promises. Nobody. Even now, the most recent one, which is what really made me have to record this, the new news that Barack Obama pressured Bernie Sanders to get out of the race. Okay. I mean, it's kind of funky to me because now Barack Obama's controlling the Democratic Party. I didn't know the man had that kind of money. On the one hand, Michael Bloomberg basically buys the Democratic National Convention or committee. And yet Barack Obama's calling the shots. Wait a minute, what? On one hand, maybe Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton had something to do with Epstein. And they're that powerful where they could go around the world and meet with basically any leader that they want to. They can make hundreds of millions of dollars doing that and selling favors and moving the government to move into alignment with their own goals, or the goals of their foundation, which is now closed. But Barack Obama's calling all the shots. Do you understand the craziness of this? On the one hand, billionaires control the political system, buys politicians, puts together organizations like ALEC and the Heritage Foundation to rebuild America in an image which they see suitable, but Barack Obama's calling all the shots. On one hand, Silicon Valley is reworking our democracy via social media platforms and working with telecommunication companies to spy on us, but Barack Obama's calling all the shots. Do you understand how crazy that sounds? I'm not saying that Barack Obama isn't playing some role. Nope, I've made that pretty clear. But this insanity of placing the blame on Obama continuously. Needs to stop. Because newsflash, news freaking flash, most black people still respect Obama and still like Obama. And most black folks really do smell something funky when you're talking about Obama in this way. I know it's going to shock you because you have black friends. It don't matter. See, because most of your black friends parrot what you say. So you're okay with that. You're fine with them. You're not hearing what I'm saying from most of your black friends. Now, you can have disagreements with black folks liking Barack Obama. But as I've tried to tell some of my progressive friends, it's a little bit deeper than politics. Just like hating OJ is a little bit deeper than the murder of Nicole. It's just how it is. You have to get over the fact. You have to get over the fact that Barack Obama is not a dictator in this country. He does not run it. The people who do run it look like you. Yes, they're white. And guess what? He's just a player in their game. And if he was to ever forget that, they would remind him of it very quickly. They would remind him of it very, very, very quickly. You guys have to get that through your head. Thank you for listening. I only intended this to be 20 minutes, but it went on for 35. Obviously, this is not going to be received well by many progressives because, you know, again, you look at yourself as being beyond race. But no, just because you talk about race, just because you talk about issues that affect black people, don't mean that you're above race. No. As Malcolm X once observed, he didn't mind white reporters interviewing him. And in fact, he gave many, many interviews to white reporters. But there was this one particular reporter whom he became friends with. And towards the end of his life, he had a conversation with this reporter and told him that, you know, you're different than the rest. You don't actually exhibit some of the other racist attitudes. And here, I'm not talking just words, ladies and gentlemen. There is a physical element, which for most progressives, it just doesn't sink into them and register that that's a part of it. There's a physical element that really tips off anybody who is conscious enough to see it. A racist before them, whether that racist is progressive or conservative. But he told him, he said, look, you don't exhibit that attitude. And you are the type of people that, you know, kind of give me hope. I don't know if he said the whole hope part, but that's how I remember it. But that was, he had given many interviews to this specific reporter. And the reporter finally asked him why, if I remember correctly. That's how that went. His reporter was like, you know, why? Like, you come to me, you talk with me, blah, blah, blah. And he told him, he goes, you just don't exhibit that attitude. You don't have those same hang-ups that other white folks have. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, and I mean this sincerely, I have met in my life probably 24 people who I can truthfully say they don't exhibit that type of attitude, if you'd call it that. 24. Maybe if I strained, I could think of another 12. But I don't believe I would actually get to 36. I don't know why that occurs. I don't know what is different with these people. But they don't exhibit it. Now, some of these folks are very apolitical. They don't really get involved with politics. And, you know, maybe that's part of it. But some of them are indeed involved in politics. And they don't mind being involved in politics. And yet, they're still there. Now, these are just people that I know, by the way. I'm not counting individuals who I've read about or, you know, seen on YouTube or what have you. I have seen a bunch of folks that absolutely, I'd say, okay, you don't seem to have the attitude. I'd have to get to know you a lot better, but you don't seem to have the attitude. But even then, I'd probably say that if I had to really think about it and you gave me a year to really compile a list, I'd probably, you know, have under 50, maybe over 50, and then you give me another year to really, you know, study those folks, and it would be below 50. The reason why this is the case, ladies and gentlemen, is because racism is cultural now. You are taught to be racist from the moment that you come out the womb. And unless you have parents who are willing to constantly challenge that and to turn that cultural pattern back, you're going to exhibit it without thinking about it. I'll give you a great example of how this is really ingrained in you. When I was a kid, I was born in the early 80s. When I was a kid, Black people weren't really featured on kids' programs. And Reading Rainbow did come along, which was LeVar Burton. But they really weren't featured on it. And when they were featured, they were always in a cameo spot, like, you know, we didn't actually exist there, but we would just be brought in periodically to give some color to the background. Well, you know, if you're growing up and you're a white kid and you see this, and then the only other Black folks that you see in your life, which back in the 80s, it was a little bit better. It was actually worlds better because you actually had people on TV who were you know, doctors and lawyers and what have you. Today, it's getting better again, but we went through a period of like 20 years where it was just horrible. But anyway, where would your mind be at if you saw this constantly? White, and then Black people once in a while. That it was your world. And that Black folks should be happy if they're invited in. Well, that's racist. That's really, really racist. Why? Because it is rooted in the fact that the system has been structured to benefit white people and to dramatically, disparagingly so, be unbeneficial to Black folks. It's not about calling people names. It's not about saying words. There's actually a philosophy behind this. And I'm taking this from the people who actually created it. It's cultural now. It's cultural. And so, it's something that progressives are going to have to deal with. They're going to have to deal with it. Because the people who you need to be angry at, they ain't Barack Obama. They don't look like Barack Obama. They look like you. They look like you. It almost makes me wonder sometimes if the reason why progressives are so hell-bent on disproving that Trump supporters are racist, that many of them voted for Trump as a repudiation of Barack Obama, not for economic terms, but on racial terms, is because they themselves didn't vote for Barack Obama because of economic terms. But they did it, and this was actually something that was suggested back in 2008, that a lot of white progressives and liberals voted for Barack Obama basically to prove that they weren't racist. And I wonder about that sometimes. I really wonder about that sometimes. Moreover, I sometimes also wonder if they're projecting when they're trying to convince me that there's not a lot of racism within Trump supporters. That then they could go after Barack Obama without going after the white establishment, which they don't, you know, they'll periodically talk about various people who are rich, but they don't really break down the white establishment, do they? No. Because that establishment is beneficial. But I wonder sometimes, are they projecting? I don't know. But these are things that they're going to have to answer. I'm going to leave it here. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, if you want to yell at me, you know, the like, you can always reach me at the included website. I am your brother, Vladimir Deese. I'll see you on the next one. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones